Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere, this is Believe.
This is Believe, Georgia Dogs Podcast on the Believe Podcast Network.
It did.
Joe Cox with an up and out. Wide open. Touchdown. Israel Truth.
Snap to Young, drops back, pressure from the edges, he throws near sideline, and it's intercepted, Kaylee Ringo at the 21, off he goes, 40, 50, 45, 40, 35, 30, near sideline, breaks a tackle, 20, 15, 10, 5, touchdown, Georgia.
Good evening, neighborhood. How about them dogs?
32, 18, let the celebration begin.
Celebration indeed. Welcome in. We're back. Football's back. Believe in Georgia Dogs is back. And joining me, the host of the Believe in Vanderbilt podcast, the Believe in Badgers podcast. He joins forces with me on Illegal Motion. He is hopefully getting a $100 million contract from Yahoo here pretty soon as he joins forces with Clint Cosgrove with the Badger Blitz report.
Badger Blitz TV and
Badger Blitz TV. Yes.
And don't forget editor-in-chief at MikeFerrellSports.com.
Editor-in-chief at MikeFerrellSports.com. He is a weight loss champion. He is a master of all things culinary and woodworking and the master of all the Adobe products. It's my man, Matthew Perkins. What's up, dude?
You are far too kind this evening, sir. It is great to be on here, as always, with you, my friend.
Absolutely. And I have to add fantasy football champion as well. So what's up, man? How's it going?
It's good, man. I'm excited. It's 30 days from, you know, football really being back. I mean, you know, I've been, you know, getting ready over there at MikeFerrellSports.com. We've had a ton of articles coming out lately, just really getting primed for the season, man. Like, camps are here. There are position battles heating up. Vanderbilt will inevitably let everyone down, even those with the lowest of expectations, like myself. So that's okay. I spent the extra $50 per seat on my season tickets this year to make sure I got the extra cushy seat with the seat back, because I'm not going to be standing to celebrate a lot of touchdowns.
That's right. So, and we'll get to the reasons why here later on down the show. But as you said, a lot of position battles happening, a lot of camp news afoot. Day one of practice for them Georgia Dogs, the defending national champions. You know, the main storylines. You know what you know from your perspective. What do you see as the potential storylines? I mean, you look at the defense, who's going to step up, the wide receiver position, what is it going to look like exactly? We know who some of the playmakers are, but how do they fit? Of course, you have the tight end room, and you can go five personnel with just all tight ends. I'm sure Brock Bowers could probably play running back, maybe even quarterback. And then the offensive line, which we'll get to later on down in the show. We'll talk about offensive lines and where Georgia stacks up against the rest of the conference or even the rest of the country, because you are a Badger and that's what Badgers are known for. So let's start with defense. What stands out to you on Georgia's defense? I know you've been doing some stuff for MikeFerrellSports.com. I know you've been looking at defenses, offensive lines, different units. The biggest unit, literally and figuratively, is the defensive line. How do you replace Jordan Davis?
I mean, physically, I don't think you do, because there isn't another human being like him on the face of the planet, right? But that's not what I think you're trying to do now. You're going to have a different philosophy. Dan Lanning's gone. The core structure is going to be there, right? The same basic premise is going to be there, but there's going to be a lot of new wrinkles. And so I think what you're going to see is Jalen Carter just being featured left and right. And he is going to be the focal point of the defense, because at this point, he's probably the most unblockable player on the interior of the defensive line in the country. For my money, that's who I would put it on. I can't think of anyone else
right.
who's up there with him. And so he's a very different player than Jordan Davis, right? He brings a very different skill set. Not to say that he's, you know, they just bring different things to the table, right? He's going to be able to get into the backfield a little bit more, but he also, he sheds blockers really well. And he's another guy that will be a top 10 player in the draft the following year. But I'm more interested for me is who's the secondary edge rusher after Nolan Smith. That is what I would really sort of want to see. And what sort of rotation does it look like on the edge for the Dogs?
Well, I mean, I think you get, Bradley Beal. In there. I think he's probably your secondary guy. Darius Smith, long and rangy out there on outside linebacker. He's somebody to watch out for. I mean, you know, Kirby's not scared to go play a freshman. You got Christian Miller on the defensive line. I mean, they're gonna get some pressure from the inside too. I mean, Jalen Carter on the interior. I mean, he's probably gonna line up at nose, but he could play any one of those defensive line spots. And projecting at the next level probably is a three technique. So I don't know. That's going to be one of the biggest things in camp. Who's going to emerge as that other guy on the other side of Nolan Smith. So I think Bradley Beal probably has the inside track, but I mean, you know, you never know.
Yeah,
Michael Williams. I mean, Chaz Chambliss is somebody as well that, you know, he comes in as an inside linebacker. He, you know, there's just some options, and there's some creative things that they can do to kind of, you know, maybe scoot some of those, you know, maybe go to a forefront some and have some of the bigger rangier defensive linemen get in there and rush the passer. But I mean, it's going to be an interesting thing. And that's probably one of Will Muschamp and Glenn Schumann duo at defensive coordinator's biggest challenge.
Yeah, so I actually wanted to talk to you a little bit more about that, because when it comes to play calling, how is that even going to work for them? Have they determined, have they put it out in the public yet? I'm not as up to date on this, obviously, as you are. That, to me, is going to be the biggest question mark about Georgia's defense more so than anything else. How do two defensive coordinators take over for one person and try to merge their minds into one unit?
Well, here's what's going to happen. You're going to have Will Muschamp in the booth, and you're going to have Glenn Schumann down on the field. It's kind of like the hype man. I think you're going to have Will Muschamp calling it, because he's a veteran play caller and he's been in that position before. So I think they're going to turn the play calling over to him, and Glenn Schumann will be kind of like the on the field spotter, relay guy, and just kind of the liaison. So. I think Glenn Schumann's going to have a really large hand in game planning, but I think when it comes to calling, it hasn't been officially put out there, but I'm pretty sure it's going to be Will Muschamp.
Okay. I mean, that makes sense. And as far as I'm concerned, the offense, I mean, yes, they lose George Pickens, but they only had him for what, four games last year?
They barely,
played the national title game in the Michigan game.
He was used sparingly in the Michigan game at that. And he was barely used in the SEC title game. And I think they trotted him out there against Georgia Tech just for conditioning purposes. I think they played him like one series. Yeah. So,
and so obviously, like, yes, heck of a receiver, heck of a player. You fantasy football players out there need to be snatching him up in the late rounds of your draft if you get a chance, because he is going to be just on fire for that team. Yeah.
Given fantasy advice, Matt.
I'm sorry. He's one of my favorite sleepers in the year.
I love
anyway, it. Anyway, you know, and plus I'm in the right location to talk Dogs receivers. Speaking of receivers though, you also lost Jermaine Burton, you know, your cousin, and he went to the enemy, and you know, that's okay. He's allowed to make decisions like that for himself. You still got Ladd McConkey. You still got Adonai Mitchell. You still got Kiaris Jackson. But I feel like, you know, with the tight ends, I still feel like there's like a fourth receiver that's going to need to come in and at least make a couple key catches. And I'm not sure who that guy is or if it's one of the freshmen who's coming in.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the freshmen, you got to think. But, I mean, you have Marcus Roseby, Jack Saint, Arian Smith, and Dominic Blaylock all coming off of injury. Mm-hmm. Blaylock probably is going to be the slowest to return. His injury was pretty bad. It's been a year and a half, and he's still not quite right. And I don't think he ever will be. I'm looking forward to Arian Smith. Arian Smith is somebody that can play in the slot. He's somebody that can stretch the middle of the field, put some pressure on the free safety. And as a fourth option, there's not a lot of pressure on him. So to me, I'm looking most forward to Arian Smith because Ladd McConkey is, he's shifty. He's your short guy. He's, you know, he is, you're going to throw double moves to him and let him go. You have A.D. Mitchell, who's your obvious number one, your ex, and is your best receiver. And then you have these other guys, you know, Kyrus Jackson playing, you know, intermediate routes, short routes, long routes. He can kind of do a little bit of everything. And then Ladd McConkey is your, you know, basically our version of Hunter Renfrow. And then you have a fourth guy who could be one of those other guys I mentioned. But Arian Smith, I think, is going to be the answer. He's the track guy. Yeah, he's got track speed. So
for sure.
To me, that's the one that stands out. I mean, he's done it before and he's made big plays before, but he just can't stay healthy.
No, that's been tough. And that's been tough. But you know what? I mean, if you've got faith anywhere, it's just got to be in playmakers at Georgia, and the tight ends can cover up for so much of it.
The tight ends can
just cover up for so much of it. And like the craziest thing to me is that we haven't even scratched the surface with Darnell Washington.
No, we haven't. We haven't.
It's,
we haven't
and it's really not even close.
Yeah.
And I, as an outsider looking in, seeing him out of high school, like they called him LeBron James in football for a reason. Like you look at his body, you look at his athleticism, and it's a little bit, I don't want to say jarring, but if you just look at first glance, when you put Darnell Washington out there against the rest of the tight ends, you should think that he should be dominating everyone, but no, it's Brock Bowers who's sort of like, just at first glance, if you're walking in the room, you're gonna think like, okay, he's like the average guy, right?
Yeah, but that dude is a superior athlete. I mean, he's not. I mean, you look at him next to Darnell Washington, everybody looks short against Darnell Washington.
Exactly, and that's what I'm saying.
But he's like 6'5" himself. I mean, he's a big dude. But he looks tiny against.
I know, and I guess you know, watching like seeing them like they were showed up like two tight ends on one side, like you know, one of these things is not like the other. And Darnell Washington, I want so much from him.
I want Mike White to recruit him for basketball and him be a dual sport guy. But Arik Gilbert again is somebody that also can play that fourth receiver. I mean, you could go three tight ends, split Arik Gilbert out.
Is he officially eligible?
He's officially eligible. He is a full go.
Okay. You know what? Kudos to him. Cause I know he had struggled academically at LSU and I'm glad to hear that he has turned it around. He had some
eligibility problems.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Problems coming in last year is why he didn't play. But he's, you know, ever since he kind of got it together, spring semester, he was academic player of the week on a couple of occasions. So he's really kind of found his groove. And if you watch him in the spring game, I mean, the dude is just, you can see why he was, you know, you can see why he was a high four star coming out of high school.
Yeah,
out of Norcross. I mean, it was a shock that he went to LSU to begin with, but if he can cut his weight down a little bit, but and he looks like he came into G-Day at 265. Mm-hmm. If he cut that down a little bit, he can be more of a threat on the outside. So, I mean, you've got options, and some of those options are listed at tight end, but like Brock Bowers and even Oscar Delp is like a lighter version of Brock Bowers. Like they're kind of the same dude, and he made some plays in the spring game. So like you got a fourth option there as a true freshman.
It's not fair. It's really not fair.
No, not if you're looking at tight ends, but I'm excited about the running backs too. I mean,
I'm excited to see like Kendall Milton, more of Kendall Milton. I like him a lot.
I'm interested now. Now the biggest thing for me, Matt, is going to be with the running back positions. Who kind of falls into that James Cook role? Who falls into the Zeus role, and who falls into like the DeAndre Swift role? Like who's the all around guy? Who's the utility knife, the Swiss Army knife, like James Cook was, and who's like the hammer? And I think Daiwan Edwards is a name to look for. I anticipate he's going to be kind of like that hammer, the closer, you know, the guy that comes in fourth quarter and just rams it down the throat.
What about Branson Robinson?
Oh, that dude looks like. Yeah, that dude is getting some looks. We'll see. I mean, he's just a freshman.
You want a hammer? Do you want a hammer? Because yeah. Branson Robinson can be a hammer.
He can be a hammer. We'll see what he does in camp. I'm excited to see kind of how that shakes out in the first scrimmage. But Daiwan Edwards, man, good Lord. Like,
all right.
He's gotten it done at the college level. He's proven it at the college level. He's earned number three reps.
There you go.
I'm excited about that, man. So defensively, linebackers, inside linebackers, Dumas Johnson is really kind of taking on that N'Kobe Dean role.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that he's going to be N'Kobe Dean because that's very, very tough. Like N'Kobe Dean had some big shoes to fill with Roquan Smith leaving. He filled them quite nicely, but I mean, he'll never be Roquan Smith, and that's okay. He doesn't have to be. N'Kobe Dean is N'Kobe Dean, which is plenty good enough. And the Philadelphia Eagles got a steal on that one. So if you do individual defensive players,
that's Coach, one guy I wanted to check in on was one of my favorite guys in the 2022 high school class, mm-hmm. or 2021, I should say, Smail Mondon or Mondon. What is going on with him? Is he going to be in the mix this year?
Yeah, he'll rotate. I mean, if you're in the two deep on defense, you'll rotate. He's at the money position. So you got Mike and Money. So he's kind of Money is an inside linebacker position. So he's kind of moved up a little bit to the money position. MJ Sherman, again, going back to outside linebackers, he's a name that's popping up too. As somebody that's going to be tough on the edge. So, I mean, there's options. It's kind of like the no-name position after Nolan Smith. It's kind of okay, who are these guys and how are they going to unfold? So,
mm-hmm.
that's something to look forward to. And then the DBs, I think, are going to be strong. You have Christopher Smith coming back. You have some guys that need to step up. I'm interested to see if Nyland Green can make that jump. He was a four-star kid, freshman last year. Had some promise, but never really made it on the field. So I'm kind of interested to see what he can do. Tyke Smith is somebody who was injured all of last year, transferred from West Virginia. What is he going to do?
Yeah, I thought he was going to be the most impactful DB transfer in the country last year.
And he wasn't.
And he wasn't because of injury, but at the end of the day, it didn't really matter that much. But, you know, now you get an extra season out of him and him, you know, the Smith brothers back there. One of the best safety pairings in the country. If Tyke is back to the same Tyke Smith we saw in 2020 at West Virginia when he was, I believe, a second team All-American.
Yes. Yes, he was. Second team All-American. Just needs to get healthy, honestly. Just needs to get healthy. So, you know, the defense, I think you have some good leaders. I was about to say Jarrell. Let's say Jarrell Casey. He's not on UGA's defense, but Jalen Carter and Christopher Smith, I think, are going to emerge as your two leaders on this defense. I think they're going to kind of keep that culture going, which is good. You have guys that you're going to start to see. You're going to have these big alpha leaders, you know, like what N'Kobe Dean and Jordan Davis were. You're going to see something similar with Chris Smith and Jalen Carter. And then down the line, you'll some other guys will step up, you know, this year and not sure exactly who they are. I think Dumas Johnson is going to step up. Juwan Dumas Johnson is going to step up as an inside linebacker. I think he'll emerge as a leader and they'll groom him for next year. To lead that linebacking core. So, man, I'm excited about camp news. I mean, again, day one, so there's not a whole lot you can glean from it. It's just good to get these guys back out and working. But I can tell you this, the rest of the nation is screwed. Just go ahead and lock down Stetson Bennett for the Heisman. If you've seen his new fade haircut, his new nickname is Stetquavius.
Stetquavius. I can get behind this.
Stetquavius Bennett. So just look that up and you'll thank me later. Stetquavius Bennett. He's got probably the tightest, sickest fade I've ever seen. So he's got all the swag in the world, man. He's finally QB1 and not looking over his shoulder. I hope that doesn't go to his head, but it probably shouldn't because he's lucky to be there. They do this thing for social media where they hold up, you know, like the first day of kindergarten, first grade. So
it's
first day of dogs camp, right? And it says year, who's your coach? Some other things on there, but Stetson Bennett says he's in his 74th year at Georgia. So he's owning that he's been there for a while.
That's awesome.
So he's got a ton of confidence, and a lot of people were worried about, well, you know, maybe it was just luck. I mean, yeah, it was luck. I mean, you have to take a little bit of luck. I mean, that's what it takes to win a national championship. But he's gonna be good, dude. I mean, the way he's comfortable in the pocket, the way he distributes the ball, he can move, he can run the RPO offense, he can pull the ball and run it. I mean, he can hurt you so many different ways, and people think he has this pop gun arm, and he doesn't.
No, he definitely doesn't.
And you know where it switched? You know where that switch flipped for him?
I was gonna say the Tennessee game.
Well, the Tennessee game, but it really, like, he kind of came into his own then. But people were still questioning him. When he finished that Orange Bowl game, I was like, okay, I'm never doubting him again. Like, because after the SEC championship, I know I came on right here and asked Israel the same question. And we talked about it on Illegal Motion for a fact. And I was like, man, we know what we got in Stetson. We're done. I'm done with him, you know, all that stuff. And he goes out and wins a natty.
Yep, of course he does. Of course he does. Because you
shut me the F up.
Well, you know what? At least you guys can have that, because you know who can't have it, and that's Vanderbilt fans. Because despite whatever Clark Lee says at SEC Media Days, they are not going to be at the top anytime soon.
So you're talking about you're not going to be celebrating many touchdowns. You're going to get a cushioned seat. I already
spent the money on the cushioned seat. I'm not wasting my money anymore. I need, you know, I'm getting older, coach.
Well, you're getting lighter. So like you're in a lot better shape than me. Although I think I've dropped like 10 pounds since start of camp, but
get it, bud.
The Commodores bring anything? Is Mike Wright anything to write home about? I mean, pun intended.
No. Okay. So there's a couple things I think about this group that are really intriguing. Mike Wright is now QB1. Like, we know he's QB1 from the jump. There's no more battle with Ken Seals. It is Mike Wright's show. And because of that, they've had an entire offseason to actually build an offense around his strengths. What are his strengths? He was the Georgia State champion in the 200 meters as a senior in high school. He can scoot. Mm-hmm. And he's not inaccurate on the move. He's not like super accurate, but he can make a throw on the move, and he can get to the edge fast. He's going to need that. The offensive line is porous. They lost Tyler Steen, their only real lineman worth his salt. We can dive into offensive lines later. You know, that's like my thing, but you know, he was the only really good one. Oh, guess what? Now he's the starting left tackle at Alabama. So transfer portal 101, folks. Yeah. I think this wide receiver group, like last year's group, is sneaky good. I really like Will Shepard. I think that he has the best connection with Mike Wright. And I think that the two of them seem to be in sync, especially when he is scrambling. Shepard and Wright, when he's outside of the pocket, have an uncommon connection. Which, again, like I've said, that's good. I like that
description, uncommon connection. Okay.
They do. Like, Shepard just seems to know where he needs to be when Wright is scrambling.
It's almost like they share a brain.
well, or something like that. It's just that they just have some sort of intrinsic feel to know, like, okay, where do I need to put myself if you're Shepherd, like in the alley where he can get the ball to. It doesn't always work, obviously, when you're throwing off balance on the run. It's not always going to work, but I have more faith in that connection than I do really in anything else. I think Ramon Davis is, I think he's the caliber of running back who could start at, I don't know, a third of the schools in the SEC. I think he's actually at least league average running back. Behind him, no, not so much. But well,
you know, also, I don't think there's a ton of star power at the running back position in the conference this year. So I think he stands out as well for that. I mean, he's a talented guy, and if they can generate anything in the passing game, I think you have a chance. So Joey Lynch has a big task ahead of him with this offensive line. I mean, you know, play calling wise, I mean, you know, you can get yourself out of a lot of trouble with some play calling. I think if you can, you know, design an offense that can be a little more like, I think Mike Leach is as gimmicky as he seems, he does have a knack for understanding what he needs to do to make his team that usually has lesser talent viable and can win. Like James Franklin knew that. We had back-to-back winning seasons. Like he knew that he could just recruit a couple guys, and you know, Will Shepherd could be that guy for them. Ramon Davis could be that guy for them. So like, the guy
that I am most interested to see at least progress this year, there's a true freshman that's going way, way under the radar. So if you want a deep sleeper, Coach, Jaden McGowan. Deep sleeper. Jaden McGowan. He is a jitterbug slot receiver, true freshman out of South Carolina.
Okay.
And he has been making guys miss left and right. Vandy's already had, I think, six or seven practices so far. They started real early. And so, because they have a week zero game.
Yeah.
And so
Bowl game in Hawaii, you guys are 7-point favorites in that one.
I know. We shouldn't be, but I don't know. Actually, it's the time of year where every fan base feels more confident. And I actually do feel more confident today than I did, you know, even 2 weeks ago going into it. But I think that the offensive line is clearly going to be what holds them back. I think that, you know, and then on the defensive side of the ball, I'm worried about the defensive backs. They just don't have the speed. I think the linebackers are solid. I actually think the linebackers are.
I think really Gorgie's going to be a dude.
I don't think he's going to be. I think he already is a dude.
I mean, he's going to be even more of a dude. Like,
I think so too.
He's going to be a dude on the national scale.
I mean, the last time they had someone like that, I mean, he's not going to be Zach Cunningham. Like, I don't think anyone's going to be Zach Cunningham for a while. But I mean, he was the last defender Vanderbilt had at the national level.
I mean, he's going to be making all the plays for Vanderbilt. I mean, he has all the tools that he can be the guy and somebody that can really make some noise around the conference.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, he's somebody you definitely have to game plan for, but if you can pass protect, you could probably get a few deep on these DBs, and Stetquavius Bennett can certainly sling that rock. So, so one of they get a transfer, a linebacker transfer from Clemson. So it looks like they're, you know, at least bolstering that position.
Well, here's the thing. He's right now not even in line to start through the first six practices. He's running with the twos. It's Anthony Orji and Ethan Barr as sort of their two middle backers and like the anchor position. You just, you know, their star positions with CJ Taylor. A lot of people thought Kane Patterson was going to come in, usurp Ethan Barr from last year, but I think that really lit a fire under the butt of Ethan Barr. And he has been an absolute rock star. All the reports coming out of camp, got to give a shout out to my guy, Chris Lee over at VandySports.com, because he is always on top of it. And you know, he's a really good guy to help keep, he helps keep me informed. I've gone on his podcast, he's been on mine, and you know, he does a really good job, you know, bringing these camp reports out. And you know, one of the things he's been preaching is that like Barr just like took his game to another level, man. And it's been, that's been really good for that linebacking unit. I think that I was a little bit surprised that Davion Davis didn't test the transfer portal. He was their best defensive lineman last season. We saw what happened with their best offensive lineman. Steen goes to Alabama. Now he's playing for, you know, a big time contender. I thought Davis was going to test the portal. He's a guy who is a disruptor on the interior of the defensive line. He was far and away their best player last season on the defense, alongside Orji. And I was shocked that he came back to Nashville, quite frankly, and that's been a boon for the team. They've had a Malik Langham really step up next to him to be a true like number two guy, like right next to him. But their edge rush really struggled last year. It really, really struggled last year, and they need to get something out of it. And right now, it looks like Miles Capers is the guy that is going to be the, you know, is going to be the main pass rusher, but he's flashed at times, but he's never been able to put anything together, you know, that we've seen so far. But again, he's really, really young, and he's kind of taking over from Michael Owusu, who's still on the team as an older guy. But, you know, that's a really interesting, you know, spot to watch on the defense, I think. And it's really going to be telling who, you know, who's going to be really lining up in those, if when Vanderbilt, the rare occasion that Vanderbilt gets an opponent in third and long, who's actually going to, is someone going to be able to get out there, rush the passer, and actually convert and get the quarterback to the ground?
We'll see. I mean, year two, there's always some surprises. There's always some things that happen between, you know, the guys that are there, the guys that chose to stay. I mean, for Davis to choose to stay, that should tell you a little bit something about that culture and how it's improving a little bit, and how things are starting to kind of, I don't want to say click just yet, but you're starting to see that movement in the right direction. So we'll see if Vandy can do it. I think Clark Lee needs to program some emotions in there. But last thing before we jump into your favorite topic, that's the Hogs, the heavy bellies. Is this new Vandy logo, is it growing on you, or is it still bad?
No, it's trash. It's absolute trash.
Like Star V. Like, I don't know why they got rid of the Star V.
Like literally, like what there's like one icon like that you associate with Vanderbilt. It's a Star V. You're gonna throw it out the window. No, let's just take. Let's take the Villanova logo, but take the History Channel paint job and put it on the Villanova logo. And that's what we're going to do.
Oh, the History Channel paint job. I mean, that, oh God, that's
what, bad. What, that's the best way I can describe. That's
that,
all.
I mean, that's a great, that's a great description. That sums up just how bad it actually is. Yep. So,
and this is after they just had spent what, $330 million on brand new facilities that had all been painted with the Star V.
Now they got to redo it. Dumb. All right, let's get into offensive linemen.
Right,
shall we?
Please.
So
please.
SEC offensive linemen. You and I have been talking. You wrote an article on MikeFarrellSports.com about these offensive linemen.
I love them. I absolutely I love the Hogs. I love the Hogs so much.
You told me you had some takes, you had some hot takes, some cold takes, and everything in between. So what, hot take number one,
give me a team and I'll give you a take.
Okay. Hot take number one. Okay. Can Arkansas muster up an offensive line to create enough of an attack to help KJ Jefferson vault into the upper echelon of quarterbacks within this conference?
The linchpin on that is Devin Manuel. Devin Manuel is a 6'9", 366-pound redshirt freshman. But the boy can move. Ooh. He's got shades of Mekhi Becton in him.
Oh,
he's super, super raw technically. He, you know, I mean, you see him, you see some of the stuff he does in the weight room, you see the way that he moves. He's got the body mechanics, but he doesn't have the technical ability, has been playing football a long time. But if he can really tap into that potential after being on campus for a full year, you pair him with Dalton Wagner and you have some absolutely nasty, nasty bookend tackles. That happens. I love this unit. as always. I mean, Ricky Stromberg, one of the best centers in the game. I could go on and on. Arkansas is year in and year out one of the best offensive lines to watch, just as someone who appreciates line play, just as someone who appreciates, you know, not just the individual pieces, but how they work together as a unit.
Yeah.
It hasn't even mattered who's, I mean, whether it's been the Bielema era, well, not so much obviously in the Morris era, but
nothing went well in the Morris era.
but now back in the Pittman era, they communicate so well along the offensive line. And that's why they're able to hold up at the line of scrimmage. Now it's a completely different story at the skill position with them. You know, Treylon Burks is the outlier. It hadn't been really since like the Darren McFadden days that they had true like playmakers at either the running back or the wide receiver position until Treylon Smith. I'm sure someone will come in and tell me that I'm wrong, but you get what I'm talking to, right? It's always been about that offensive line play. And that's what's been able to even keep them in games with teams that are way more talented everywhere else. So yes, I actually think if Devin Williams can be that guy that is, you know, they can be, if they're that good, they're the second best team in the West.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that is very, very promising for that.
I love the Hogs. I absolutely love the Hogs.
The West is going to be interesting. Now, Tank Bigsby comes back to Auburn.
Mm-hmm, he does.
Does, I don't know why, does their lack of recruiting at that position, does it bite them in the ass even more than it has already?
At running back?
No, at offensive line. We're talking offensive line.
Okay, well, you started to Tank Bigsby and you...
Yeah, I was kind of leading into that. I kind of... I left out a few words there, but does Tank Bigsby, is he making a mistake coming back, running behind a poor offensive line? Are they a poor offensive line?
I think they are mediocre, but I don't think they're poor.
Gotcha.
They have their interior three are adequate. Okay. I think Nick Broms is a above average SEC starter.
Okay.
At center, you know, I think he, you know, he's probably the fifth or sixth best center in the SEC.
Okay.
Council and Jones are okay at guard, but their tackles aren't great, and everybody knows that. Killian Zaire is, I think he was way out of his league last year. He had four starts and he just got abused, and I don't, you know, he's gotta have taken some giant steps forward this offseason if at left tackle, if they're going to do anything to protect, well, I guess not TJ Finley anymore.
Yeah. They eluded an officer on a scooter. Never a good idea. Just ask any former Georgia player about eluding people on scooters. It's not good. So let's see. We live in Vol country.
We do.
I don't care that we live in Nashville. Nashville technically should be Commodore country, but it's not. It's still Vol country. What if a Vol fan stumbles upon this show and they make it this far? Do they have, is their offensive line going to be difference makers this year? I think that was like the final piece that they needed a year ago to make their offense even more like next level explosive.
Darnell Wright is really good. Darnell Wright's a really good left tackle. Like I didn't want to admit it, but Darnell Wright's a good left tackle.
That is spot on. I love that.
You know, and he proved to me last year that I think a lot of the reason why Hendon Hooker was able to, you know, I felt like he always had the extra half second in the pocket. And I felt like that's because you could put him out on pretty much any pass rusher, and he was gonna stalemate them 95% to 98% of the time. He was awesome. And so
he's good. He's great feet, good hand leverage, good, just good awareness of his body and just kind of getting in between that. And yeah.
The other guy on that unit that impresses me is Jerome Carvin. What impresses me though is his versatility. He's just like, it's so cliche and I hate using cliche, but coach, he's just a football player, man. It doesn't matter where you put him out there on the offensive line. He's just a football player, man.
Man, that boy just plays some ball, man.
No, it's literally just what he does. Like, I feel like I can line him up anywhere. If I'm coaching the offensive line, I'm probably putting him at guard, assuming Cooper Mays is, you know, good to go at center, and he can live up to the hype. Cooper Mays lives up to the hype. He was a top 100 recruit coming out of high school. You've already got Wright and Carvin in there. They brought in Mincy to sort of fortify, be a swing tackle. It brought him out of the portal, and they can definitely be good enough. They can definitely
Josh Heupel is showing that he can build a program. He's proving a lot of doubters wrong. I know Tennessee fans were pissed when they landed on Josh Heupel because they felt like they settled and, oh, we got the guy from UCF. No, that's the best hire you could have made, and it's showing. That guy's legit.
I mean, they've completely won me over.
Yeah, like he's won me over.
Heupel as a coach has won me over. The program will never win me over.
Yeah,
coach has won me over.
I hate it because he's wearing orange. Tennessee. I hate it, but I cannot root for him.
Okay. I have to get the hottest take off my chest though. Right.
Okay.
Now,
do it.
Who's everyone's favorite darling in the East this year, Coach?
Oh, Georgia.
Who's everyone's darling to be the dark horse?
Kentucky.
No.
Florida.
No.
In the
South
East?
South Carolina. Everyone's talking South Carolina. Oh, we have Spencer Rattler. Oh, Shane Beamer. Yeah,
darling.
Yes, they are. They're a darling. I've been hearing way too many people talk about them being, being a dark horse. You know what? Offensive line is the worst in the conference. The worst.
It's not a hot take.
It's garbage. It's worse than Vanderbilt.
It's not a hot take, though. Okay, that's pretty spot on take.
Accurate.
Accurate. I mean, I wouldn't consider that a hot take.
It is absolute hot garbage. Okay, here's my other here's my other hot take on offensive line. LSU just as bad.
That might be a little bit of a hot take. I don't know. If they're LSU, like they just all of a sudden you're like they're trash, and then all of a sudden they're like not. You know, it's just okay, that's how they roll.
I guess. I mean, they're starting a true freshman at left tackle.
Yeah, that's just part of the unknown. Like, I mean, yeah, of course they could completely fall apart and be the worst offensive line. I'll tell you this: I have more faith in LSU than I do Vandy or South Carolina.
Yeah, that didn't say much, though.
No, but you know, it's not the worst. But you know, I'm just tired of the hot takes on Spencer Rattler. The guy.
Okay, I mean. You're not going to get any argument from me there. If I'm a South Carolina fan, I'm more excited the fact that
I'm a South Carolina fan. We're probably pissed at you, but
if I'm a South Carolina fan, I'm more interested in the Oklahoma transfer Austin Stogner at tight end than I am at. That's just me just stirring the pot. And
if you're a South Carolina fan, my wife hates you.
Well, it's a good thing I'm not then.
She went to Clemson, in case you're wondering.
Okay, so here's my other, I guess, one other thing. Despite losing Charles Cross, Mississippi State might still have the second or third best line in the conference.
Yeah, that's a surprising deal because, like, you would think LSU, they can recruit, but they're relying on too many freshmen. It's going to be a dicey situation.
And a bunch of transfers. New coach and a new position coach and a new scheme and a new system. There are just so many question marks for LSU.
Yeah.
Whereas
high risk, high reward. But
Mississippi State, you're returning four or five starters. Mm-hmm. You receive all SEC center, LaQuinton Sharp. You've got some awesome. You know, we've got a couple really, really, really solid players. Quantrevis Johnson, Cameron Jones, who can play all across the line.
Would you say it's easy to recruit offensive linemen at Mississippi State because they have a certain type and super athletic guys, linemen that come over and develop?
I don't think it's necessarily easy to recruit. I think that it allows them to maximize the potential of the types of recruits that they can get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean,
I still don't think it's easy to recruit to Mississippi State. It's like, you know what? The other reason it's not easy to recruit to Mississippi State is what are they doing 90% of the time on that offense? They're passing the ball. Mm-hmm. If you're an offensive lineman, what do you like to do? You like to run block. You don't like pass blocking. Pass blocking isn't fun. What's fun? Going downhill and getting to get someone on the second level and clear them out. It's not fun to drop back and pass pro and be responsible one-on-one for an edge rusher in the SEC 60 times a game.
Yeah, that's not fun.
So if I'm an elite tackle prospect, that might be interesting to think, okay, if I'm like the greatest pass protector in the world, I'm gonna go out there. Yeah, I'll prove this. I'll be out here like Charles Cross and do that. So,
I mean, it raises your draft capital. I mean, you can always develop a run blocker.
It's just
a mentality.
He did the same thing at Washington State. They had a bunch of really good, really athletic tackles, you know, Kellen Deaches and the like come through and be, or not, sorry, not Kellen Deaches. Kellen Deaches was Arizona State, but, who am I thinking of? Play for the Eagles. I'm blanking on his name right now.
I can see the player. I can see him in a Washington State jersey. I just can't picture it. Mm-hmm. I just can't see the nameplate. So it's not Gardner Minshew, I can tell you that.
Can we talk about Georgia's line really quick though?
Yes, that's how I wanted to wrap this offensive line conversation up.
Let's do it.
Let's jump into Georgia's O line. I'll tell you who the starting, as of right now, this is the guys getting first team reps. Broderick Jones,
obviously. Broderick
Jones, left tackle. Devin Willock, left guard. Cedric Van Pran at center.
Of course.
WWE's own Tate Ratledge.
Yep.
If he's not on WWE, he should be. And then right tackle's Warren McClendon.
Interesting.
The second team is Ernest Green Jr., freshman. At left guard, Xavier Truss. Center, Warren Erickson. Right guard, Dylan Fairchild. And right tackle, Amarius Mims.
One of the things that I wasn't sure about is Amarius Mims one of the five best offensive linemen, regardless of position? And if so, can they get him in at guard?
I think they're working on that. I think he's solidified enough of a spot at right tackle. So if he gets some tackle reps, he definitely goes in. But I think on the side, I bet he's trying to learn guard. They want him to play guard. They would love for him to play left guard next to Broderick Jones.
Yes. That's
and just create a
say.
Superstar side of the line. And I would love to see that. But I mean, can he handle it? I don't know. Like, can he handle learning two spots like that? I mean, it's, you know, cross training on the offensive line can either be pretty simple or nearly impossible.
Take it from someone who just watched his line cross train for 4 years and get worse every year. I'm not necessarily all for it. One or two guys, fine. Don't need to have your entire line cross training. It's a waste of time.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a Joe Rudolph special right there, but he's gone. He's gone, isn't he?
Yeah, Bob Bostad is back. The baddest man in the business at the offensive line. Wisconsin offensive line, my friends, is back. They are going to be back to absolutely manhandling people this year. It is going to be so much fun. Jack Nelson is a psychopath at left tackle. And he just like the way he talks and the way he talks about football reminds me of Deacon Jones. We talked about he just wanted to put the opponents in a bag and beat them. Like, that's how Jack Nelson talks about football, and it gets me so excited.
Yeah, I love it. But going back to Georgia's offensive line, Cedric Van Pran, probably one of the best center prospects in the country.
Yeah.
Love him. Just he has command of the offense. He is a great communicator. He's been a rock solid center for Georgia all of last year, was a representative at media days. Broderick Jones, just a superior athlete at left tackle. It's exactly what you want.
Huge upside.
Got a good bit of time last year when they were shuffling Jamari Sawyer around with injuries to the interior guys. And Tate Ratledge coming back, that's a breath of fresh air. That helps us there at right guard. And I'm interested to see. I mean, there's quite a battle. I'm not so sure that Amarius Mims can't beat out Warren McClendon at right tackle. I think McClendon probably has a better grasp of the offense, and that's probably why he's there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Amarius Mims athletically should be able to beat him out there.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, Broderick Jones, it's interesting to me. ceiling wise, out of all the tackles in the SEC, mm-hmm. like I'm talking like peak, like NFL ceiling, I think he might have just, I would say he has the second highest NFL ceiling of any mm-hmm. tackle in the conference.
Yeah, he does. And he's just got to take it to that level. Now he's got to go out there.
Well, who's number one for you then? I said he's number two. Cause I think number one is JC Latham at Alabama. I think JC Latham is, he has the potential to be like the Michael Jordan of left tackles.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty easy. JC Latham is number one. I mean,
he is one of these single most athletic men for that size that I have seen. And I'm not Mike Farrell. I work with him. I'm not Mike. I haven't seen as much tape as he has, but my God, I mean, just the way that he moves, how he moves. He's originally from the state of Wisconsin. Of course, he had to go down to IMG and go to Alabama. He should have stayed home, gone to the University of Wisconsin. It's been starting there, but that's just me being biased. But you know, I think this Georgia line is going to be really good again. I like watching the way, you know, Georgia has played over the last couple of years, you know, really since Kirby got there and since when he brought Sam Pittman in to really sort of establish that line.
Yeah, that was great. I mean, the recruiting that Sam Pittman left the Dogs with is I mean, it's why they're in this position right now. It's why they're not freaking out having to replace a couple starters. And go back to your question, you know, who else is in the mix at the tackle position conference wise is like, or even country, you know, even nationwide. I mean, you got to throw Darnell Wright into the mix too. I mean, I think he has something to say about that position. I mean, God, my dude's just a behemoth. I'm just athletic, you know, him and Broderick Jones, JC Latham, they're all going to be great pro prospects.
Yeah. I mean, it's those three guys. And then, mm-hmm. you know, nationwide, there are, you know, I think some of the other guys you could throw in there in the country, if Jackson Kirkland is back to 100% at Washington, I think he could be coming into last year. A lot of people thought of him as a first round prospect. He had a lot of nagging injuries last year, never played up to snuff. He's back for a senior season. If he's back to health, he could move his way back into that first round conversation, I think. You know, you look in Evanston at Northwestern, and Peter Skarowski is an absolute technician. Paris Johnson, Ohio State. You know, I mentioned, you know, it's too early to tell for Jack Nelson at Wisconsin at left tackle, but I think he could be a really, really special player. He's really athletic, 6'7". He's, you know, he's quote unquote light. He's only 3'13". But I think that he has the chance to be someone really good. I mean, he was a top 100 recruit coming out of high school. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's, you know, I mean, we've talked about, you know, the Big Ten. I think that I was looking at some of the conferences out West more recently. I think that the state of offensive line play in general is, you know, typically higher in the SEC and Big Ten. And I think that's even more so this year. I think the Big 12 right now is really, really down on offensive line play. I think that I think that Baylor is really good and everyone else in the Big 12 is kind of like mediocre to poor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Connor Galvin at Baylor, he's probably the other guy that I would, and Cooper Beebe at Kansas State. Baylor's
one of those programs that just, you know, Dave Aranda is doing a tremendous job over there. I just gotta say,
he's one of the best. He's one of the best. If I had to hire a, you know, an under 50 coach to run a program, he's probably in the top 10 picks. He's not, you know, Kirby's obviously going to be up there, number one, the guys under mm-hmm. 50. But you know, if you're looking for someone like that, he is going to be way, way up there. Because mm-hmm. gosh darn it, he's a hell of a coach. And I'm the guy who thought he wasn't going to be a good head coach. I thought he was the elite level defensive coordinator who couldn't be a head coach. He didn't have the personality for it. I said it a million times and I was absolutely dead wrong.
He inspires those guys. And I think a lot of it also, Matt, is because the systems he has in place create opportunities for guys to thrive. They're not worrying about logistics stuff. They're not worried. So, he's got things in place to allow those guys to coach and allow those guys to do their thing and play fast.
So pardon me while I trip over this name I'm about to drop, but I was talking with Tristan Ebner last year, and who was one of their tailbacks.
Yeah,
and
you definitely dropped that from a two-story building.
He coming into the year, he was the number one guy, and then Abram Smith during the year took over the number one spot. And Tristan said it did not matter one bit to him. And that told me more about Dave Aranda than anything else that we've seen on the field.
Yeah. Okay. That's good insight.
Yeah. So, you know, the history of the Baylor program, still trying to scrub the stain of the Art Briles years off of them. But Dave Aranda is a pretty good person to do that. So,
I would say so.
Yeah,
I would say so. So, well, Matt, as we wrap this puppy up, man, we're you can find you pretty much all over the place, man. You're
on the internet,
like you are on both ends of the internet.
Yes, sir.
You're in every corner, every nook and cranny, and you're doing a hell of a job with all of it with Believe in Badgers, the Badgers TV thing. Yep. With Clint Cosgrove, you're doing the Mike Farrell sports.com stuff. You're doing the Legal Motion.
Yep.
Believe in Vandy, which if there's any show out there that can make Vanderbilt football interesting, it's you and Ryan Seymour.
Yeah, man. Listen, we had to take a real long hiatus after last season for a couple reasons. We will be back this fall. Me and Ryan chop it up year three for us. And, we'll always be bringing you the I think it has to be the lighter side of Vanderbilt football. It's basically us and then a lot of Bruno Reagan whenever we can have him on the show. So
I mean, if you haven't got a chance to listen to Bruno's outstanding. But I got to say this before we get out of here, on SEC After Dark, we put together a list of and I'll tell you the rules here in just a second, but we put together a list of the top five all-time wide receivers in the conference. Now, we put some rules on it to make this conversation interesting, to make it to where it was not just a who's who of Alabama and LSU receivers. Mm-hmm. So the rules were, You were only allowed one finalist nominee from each school. So we narrowed down the finalists from every school, all 14 schools, and we took the top five. Then we took the top five out of that list.
Okay.
Jordan Matthews was number one.
Yeah.
He leads the SEC in all-time receptions by 30 catches.
Yep.
He's second in yards.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Vanderbilt didn't score a whole lot of touchdowns in his time. Or if they did, they didn't score a whole lot of touchdowns with wide receivers. That was more of a scheme thing than anything. So, but man, like we look back at, and I even watched some of his highlights again just to kind of see like what
he was did. A beast, man.
He was a dude, man. So our list was Jordan Matthews 1, Julio Jones 2, AJ Green 3, Ja'Marr Chase 4, AJ Brown 5. Now, it was a controversial list, but if you don't really know the rules, the list isn't going to make much sense.
Can you repeat that for me one more time? Jordan Matthews 1, Jordan Matthews, Julio 1, Jones 2,
AJ Green
3,
Ja'Marr Chase 4, AJ Brown 5.
I might challenge you with a Mike Evans.
Yeah, we decided that Mike Evans, if he'd had one more good season, he would have made the list for sure.
Percy Harvin.
We didn't feel like he was better than Reed L. Anthony, so he didn't represent Florida. We thought Reed L. Anthony was a better fit for this list than Percy Harvin.
Interesting. Okay, I don't really disagree with you. I don't agree that Julio Jones is the best Alabama wide receiver.
Okay. Who's your nom?
I just don't.
Who do you think it is? Is
Devonta
it
Devonta Smith? Yes, it's Devonta Smith.
Yeah, I mean
Devonta Smith.
It was just kind of a, I think what separated it was just the impact that Julio had on defenses, and he didn't have the other guys around him that Devontae Smith had around him.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like, when you looked at it, it was like a razor's edge of things. Like, I mean, you know, Julio won a national championship. He did all this stuff in 3 years. Probably if he came back for a fourth year, he may have won the Heisman. But, you know, Devontae Smith had more guys around him. Devontae Smith
also meant that he had to share the touches more.
He had to share the touches more, but I don't know. Like it was and a Bama fan, even our Bama guy, Jake Thomas was the leading guy for Julio Jones. So,
I mean, I completely understand it. I think that, you know, in his day, like Julio Jones was such a physical freak and marvel.
Mm-hmm.
Even at the college level, and the fact that he and AJ Green came in the same year to the same, like that is so unusual for those two to be so, you know, tied together. They were 1 and 2 coming out of high school. They both had 3 years in the SEC. Were both, according to you guys, best receivers in the history of their program. And I you know, I always thought that was sort of a fascinating sort of comparison. Yeah. And also, what would have happened if those two guys flip schools? What happens if AJ Green goes to Alabama and Julio goes to Georgia?
I don't think much happens.
You don't think much changes?
No, I don't. Yeah. I don't. I think they have the same impact. I mean, Georgia didn't have much around AJ Green, mm-hmm. and Georgia's defenses were atrocious anyway, so it's not mm-hmm. like they were going to win. They were going to win that many more games. I mean, AJ Green helped Aaron Murray put up numbers and put up records.
Yeah.
I think Julio would have done the same thing. I think if they switch places in Julio and there's no 4-game suspension, I for what's completely legal now.
Yeah.
I think some of your numbers would be even better with AJ Green, but nonetheless, the totality of the impact they had on the game, you know, we just felt like Julio Jones was a step above. He kind of got everything started at Alabama. He was kind of the one that started all of that, started the run on receivers. He made it okay for Nick Saban to recruit receivers, because I think he was kind of allergic to that early on. So he made it okay to run spread offense.
That's true. No, that is very true. And he did sort of signal a switch from mm-hmm. just being pure, like literally 3 yards of the cloud of dust. Like that's what it looked like they were doing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it showed that they can actually have a vertical passing game. So
yeah, and I think philosophy wise, I think if Sarkisian was the coordinator, if 2020 Sarkisian was the coordinator for the 2009 Bama team, I think mm-hmm. Julio wins the Heisman.
Interesting.
I think Julio wins the Heisman and not Mark Ingram.
Yeah, I can see that.
It was a scheme. It was a scheme thing. You mm-hmm. know, kind of like Jordan Matthews, how he didn't have more touchdowns. Like it was just a scheme thing. Like they were gonna pound it, and then throw it out to Julio. Mm-hmm. Now it's, you know, Najee Harris probably would have been a shoo-in for the Heisman in 2009.
I mean, listen, if Mark Ingram can win the Heisman, anyone can win the Heisman.
I mean, Najee Harris is.
I mean, no disrespect to Mark Ingram. Like,
right.
Apparently, like, world class good guy, too. From like, what I've heard.
Great guy. Good running back.
Good running back, too. But, I mean, come on. You look at him and then you look at Derrick Henry, the other Alabama running back to win the Heisman recently. And, like, apples and oranges, my friends.
Yeah. I mean, if you have Derrick Henry, you're not feeding the rock, then, I mean, I understand that one. That's completely. That one I get. So, okay, Matt. Well, I know I just shouted out like every one of your podcasts, and that probably took about 30 minutes. So, social media, what, where all can we find you and your work?
Me personally on Twitter @_Perko_. We're over at MikeFarrellSports.com @MFarrellSports on Twitter. That's Mike. You can find all of our stuff over there. We're publishing about typical days, 5-7 articles a day on weekdays, lots of stuff, lots of good lists, good debates. So come on over to MikeFarrellSports.com. lots of recruiting stuff going on right now as well. You know, every day that we've got impact recruitments, there's a nightly recruiting roundup. We've got recruiting breakdowns from some guys who really chop up the film well. So definitely be checking out MikeFailSports.com, Badger Blitz TV on YouTube, part of BadgerBlitz.com, part of the Rivals.com network. Me and my man Clint Cosgrove talking about recruiting once a week, breaking down some film and having a great time over on YouTube. We've got Believe in Badgers podcast, me and Bernie back in the saddle, camp starting. We got Joe Thomas coming on later this month. That's going to be really fun.
I can't wait for that one.
That one's going to be pretty epic. I'm very,
you got to keep your composure, Matt. Okay. Keep your,
well, okay. So, but okay. It won't be that hard. Cause I've met Joe before. So
you have met Joe before.
I've had dinner with Joe before when I was in college, actually. Long story. You'll have to listen to the podcast in order to hear about it. Cause he definitely does not remember it at all. I was on a recruiting visit. Believe in Vandy will be back. And then next week, the triumphant return, season 8 of Illegal Motion, Coach, you and me, and the Josh Cook, who finally cut off all of his hair. Thank God.
Hopefully he didn't lose his edge though.
I think the hair is, I think the hair is going to give him more of an edge now.
It's going to give him a harder edge.
Exactly. There you go.
Get them tight edges.
High and tight.
High and tight, baby. Here we go. He donated his hair. So we'll, I can't wait to get back to IM, man. That's such a fun show. It's obviously my longest running podcast than this one, which is going, which is into its third season.
Yes, sir.
So, but yeah, as always, if you want to find us, you can scroll it right down there below. Subscribe to us on YouTube. Subscribe to us. Find us on TikTok, actually, at TroopStar28 on Twitter and IG. You can find me at Coach Corey Burton on IG. Subscribe, comment, leave us that 5-star rating. Give us a little feedback. Tell us we're doing a good job. Old F. Purr was... He was very complimentary.
He loves a good comment.
He loves a good comment. He's such a nice commenter. I love it. So find us anywhere you find your podcast. But for Matt Perkins, I am Corey Burton. This is the Believe in Georgia Dogs podcast on the Believe Network, coming at you on the video side, Brinks.tv. Until next time, go Dogs.
Go Dogs.
This is the Believe in Georgia Dogs podcast on the Believe Podcast Network.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.